What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
Okay, first things first, before we get into this, well, really get into this edition of Pucks and Seven, Victoria, I'm speaking with Victoria Matiash, and it is Victoria Day. And so I'm just going to say this anyway. I know it has nothing to do directly with you, but indirectly, it's kind of neat that I get to speak with a Victoria on Victoria Day. So I'm going to say happy day to you, regardless.
Happy me day. It is happy me day. I'm fine. Again, I don't, it doesn't really have my, no great connections to the British royal family, so to speak, but I usually get a couple of phone calls from a couple of cousins and friends that do wish me a happy me day. I don't get nearly enough gifts, though. I will say that the more presents would be appreciated, and so if anybody wants to shoot me something my way,
I'm gonna mark this down. Next year, send Vic a gift before Victoria Day. Pucks and Seven, here we go. Another Stanley Cup playoff edition. Ryan Payton, the aforementioned Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter at Ryan M. Payton, at Victoria Matiash. Also, Vic, you can hear her, local news talk station in Toronto, and ESPN.com, fantasy hockey, all that great stuff. I'm on Sirius XM, NHL Network Radio, Channel 91, Hot Stove on the weekends. Do some fill-in work as well, and cover, of course, the Kraken for the hockey writers. Before we get into the East, we're going to start in the West first, but this you're seeing this right now, this just came in to me this morning. And so what this is, it's a note to the four remaining teams in the NHL. This is actually a note to the four remaining teams. So it says, Dear Vegas, Dallas, Carolina, and Florida, regulation games go 60 minutes. If you feel like playing extra time, you can play extra, but just to let you know, a normal game is 60 minutes. Four games, two games on each side, they've all gone to overtime. Does it tell you anything? I don't know. The teams are close. Yes, that 4-0 OT game was ridiculous. Anyway, I know this thing didn't come in today, but I'm just saying. It's very strange what we've seen, Vic, in the first
They've been very closely matched. That's what it's telling us. They're very well matched. But this is what we anticipated. This was the round that you and I have talked. You and I have talked on other shows. You and I have talked to other people. We've talked ourselves about how this is the round where you're truly flipping a coin in the air about who you're picking. And I went back and forth with both series, as a Vegas, as a Dallas, as a Carolina, as a Florida, because they are so well matched and this is coming to fruition and it's been a lot of fun. And they're not all of the overtime games are equal, of course. There's the one that went to the quadruple overtime. And others got wrapped up very, very quickly. I'll tell you right now, I could have used more. I was all settling in. I was happy streaming everything on the deck. I had the golf going. I had, we're in Toronto, so I was watching the Jays game, which was a stinker, but that's fine. Well, it didn't end very well. Mm-hmm. Had the golf going, had the Vegas game going, and I was looking forward to maybe a marathon game because it was in the afternoon and the weather was beautiful and all the rest of it. But they wrapped it up. Yep. Chandler Stephenson wrapped it up pretty quickly.
So Vegas, to a man, they said after that it was basically 50 minutes and it was a terrible hockey game. They
were
stunk.
Awful.
They were terrible. They were terrible. But this is what makes this team a very, very good hockey team. The amount of comebacks that they can do. It's their eighth comeback in the postseason already this year. And let me just read off these. Back in 06, the Canes came back 9 times. They won the cup. In 09, the Penguins came back 10 times. They won the cup. 2014, the Kings won the cup. They came back 8 times. 2022, the Avalanche came back 10 times. They won the cup. The only team that didn't, that led the playoffs in the year, that didn't win the cup was Dallas. In 2020, they lost, but they came back 9 times. So this, to me, is an example. It doesn't matter how bad you play. You get one bounce, one lucky break, whatever it is, and you come back. So credit to Vegas. Give them a ton of credit as well. Tough one for Dallas, it was. Because remember, in overtime, Wyatt Johnston had a great chance, moments before? And then it's that old adage, a great chance at one end, you come back down, and they score, and that's what Vegas did.
Well, if you had told me ahead of this game that the Dallas Stars were going to keep or hold Vegas to five shots in the first, five shots in the second, I would say the Stars are going to, they're going to emerge with the victory in this one. But it just goes to show they just hung out. They hung in there. They hung in there long enough to get, and then even with a couple minutes left when you're like, okay, Dallas is now, we're going to be tied up. The series is going to be 1-1. And then Jonathan Marchessault, who is super clutch and has been amazing this postseason, ties it up with very little time left. And then all of a sudden we're watching and we're like, okay, we're going to overtime now. And now you have to favor the Knights. I mean, that's what happened. So it's easy to say hindsight and all the rest of it. And it was nice to see Stevenson score the goal as well, because he had a bad game. He took a couple of bad penalties. I think he would like to have both of them back.
Yeah.
And just to see him redeem himself for his teammates. I just could, again, not to beat the point to death, but I could have used an overtime period or two in that one.
I was having such a nice afternoon.
I could have enjoyed more hockey in this one.
And you know what? And you know what's funny is that last week or last time we did this, I remember you saying, and even on the weekend you came on my show and I said, so what are you doing on Sunday? Well, I'm going to be out on my deck. I'm going to be watching the game. And I get it. You wanted more. You mentioned about the comebacks and how close it was and Marchessault and all that type of thing. And Dallas having chances, all that. It's a completely different story with Dallas in overtime. They're not good in OT this postseason. Vegas is 3-0. They're 4-0 in one goal games. And how about this? When they allowed the first goal in a game in the playoffs, they're 7-3. They're 7-3. So they've allowed the first goal 10 times, and they've come back to win 7 of those 10 hockey games. That doesn't happen a lot. And that, to me, is a team, again, going back to what I was saying about them being a very good team, they play to win all the time. I really don't think they play to lose. Even if they have the lead, they keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. I think Adin Hill's done a great job so far. I really do. Not easy shoes to fill, even though there's been 100 goalies that have been played in Vegas. And this was the first time, I think, too, that Jake Oettinger didn't win a game after he did lose, even though it was close. I get it. It's not like a blowout game.
It was the first time. This is the first time in the postseason he's lost back-to-back.
Right. And he was great in the season. I think he was 17-1-3.
So what are we expecting then moving forward?
Yeah, so Dallas is better at home. I do think Dallas will take game three. I think they will get a pushback. And to what we said off the top, Vegas played terribly. Dallas didn't play that badly, but they didn't get that, you know, at the end of it all, they came out on losing it. I think Dallas is going to push back. Am I going to be surprised if it goes to OT? No, I'm not. But I do think Dallas will make a good pushback. Pete DeBoer said, look, we're going back home. We're not out of this thing. We're good on home ice in the playoffs, all this type of stuff. I think they'll push back.
I agree with you. I think Oettinger is going to steal this one. I think Oettinger is going to put on a goaltending clinic in game three. And I think one of the veteran players, either your Pavelskis or your Jamie Benns, are going to rise to the occasion, throw the team on their back, so to speak. It's cliched, but really, really bring that little extra that veteran leadership can provide in a situation such as this. And I think that's what's going to happen. And I think we're going to be at 2-1 after, let's say, what day is it today? After Tuesday's game, because tonight we have Carolina.
After Tuesday, 2-1.
Tuesday's
game. And that would be good. And any time you get to a postseason and you have four great teams left, I'd love to, even if you're not cheering for any of them, I'd love to see it go seven. I really would, because it's great hockey. It's intriguing. It's enticing. Yeah, it's exciting hockey and all that stuff. Miro Heiskanen, by the way, just continues to just, I don't know, play like he's an all-world type of player. I mean, he is, but I'm not going to say this is kind of like his coming out party. It's not, because everybody knows how good he is. But just the amount that Pete DeBoer relies on him and Dallas relies on him, it's key. You need that type of player on your team if you want to be successful. And to me, this is just shining exactly the way that Dallas is hoping it's going to be. So.
And he's so young, Ryan. He's so young. And he's going to be around. He is going to be in the conversation for the Norris season after season after season moving forward now. I think he's just going to plant himself in that chat for, again, seasons to come, and he's going to probably win a couple before it's all over and done with.
You need that stud defenseman. Tampa did it with Victor Hedman, Cale Makar on Colorado, Letang when the Penguins won it, Chicago years ago, Duncan Keith. You have to have that really strong defenseman. Anyway, game three coming up tomorrow, and that one is set for 8 Eastern time in Dallas, then game four, of course, in Dallas as well, and that will be on Thursday because it's going at least 4. The Calgary Flames. Let's talk about them. Craig Conroy, it's pretty much signed, sealed, delivered. They just got to dot the I's and cross the T's that he'll become the new GM. Early thoughts.
think it's, I mean, what we expected, isn't it? He's been an assistant there for so long.
Yep.
He jumped from being a player back in like 2011, 2012. I can't remember exactly the year, but it was around then. He jumped from being a player pretty much instantaneously into hockey operations. He's been learning ever since. He's experienced, but he's still young. He's only 51. So there's still a fresh perspective he can bring, but he's also so familiar with the organization. He loves it there. The fans love him. The teams, he's a good guy, right? So it's like, nobody's rooting against Craig Conroy. And he's all in. I think, again, this was the decision that seemed obvious. So, and sometimes the most obvious decisions are the right ones. We're not going to know for years whether it was a success or not, right? Because he's been an assistant GM. He hasn't been the one who's made the final decisions on things. To me, it's just going to be interesting. How long is it going to take for him to entice Jerome McGinley to come and join the organization as well? Because those two just go, they're hand in hand, right?
They're partners
on the ice. Yeah. Yeah. And we've been waiting for McGinley to maybe take that leap. And now that is one of his best buddies is going to be the GM. I mean, it is official. I think we're just waiting for the announcement.
The two peas in a pod thing. These are two flames on a fire. How about that? Craig Conroy.
Oh, no, that's nice. Right. Two flames in a fire. Okay.
Two flames in a fire. Yeah.
That's right. That works.
Here's my question to you. And I was thinking about this this morning before we did this. If Daryl Sutter was relieved of his duties before Brad Treliving relieved himself of his duties, would Brad Treliving still be the GM in Calgary? What do you think?
I think there's a good chance. Or no, let me rephrase.
Yeah.
I think there's a chance.
Okay.
I think there's a chance.
Okay.
I think maybe that was, I also do think, I believe him as well. I believe Brad when he says, I'm tired. I've had enough. I need a break.
Yes,
but we'll see this. We're going to get to the East in our next segment. If all of a sudden Brad Treliving is the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, we're going to know he didn't need that much of a break, right? We're going to know that it was personal in Calgary because he's not taking time off. So that's going to speak volumes if that's how that turns out. We will get more into that topic again next segment. But it would have been interesting to see. I mean, the only person who knows this is him, right? And I don't think he's going to be blabbing about it anytime soon. But later on, we might find out if Daryl Sutter had been relieved earlier, maybe he'd still be sticking around. But maybe he just does need a break. You know, people do. So,
yeah, they get burnt out. No, I didn't try to mean that as a pun at all. Flames burnt out. I did not mean that one at all. But they do get burnt out. That actually just flowed.
You should have just left it alone. It was a piece of art.
True. They're expecting to name him on Tuesday. That's what they think. But at some point this week, Craig Conroy will be named GM of the Calgary Flames. All right. As Vic did say, we're going to go east now. We did the west. We're going to talk about the East Carolina Hurricanes and the Florida Panthers. We'll put a wrap, at least for the time being, on the Toronto Maple Leafs and Kyle Dubas. We'll talk Joel Quenneville and Gary Bettman, the commissioner, as well, as Vic shakes her head. Okay. We'll get to that right now. Take a break. We'll come back. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Maddie-Ash. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Maddiash.
He is Ryan Payton and I am Victoria Maddiash, and this is Pucks in Seven, playoff edition, as I like to say this time of year. It's another playoff edition of Pucks in Seven. We just ran through the West and what's going down between the Vegas Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Also touched on Craig Conroy in our first segment becoming the next GM of the Flames. Now we're going to shift over to the East, where tonight, it's Monday, May 22nd. Tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, the Florida Panthers will try to seize a 3-0 series lead over the Carolina Hurricanes.
Unbelievable. Sorry, what did you just say? What
the Florida what did Panthers? You just say? The Florida Panthers will try to seize a 3-0 series lead at home, just how everybody had it drawn up a couple months ago. This is exactly how we thought it was all going to unfold. Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, good on them. They have just. We were talking about the same thing with the Vegas Golden Knights in the last segment. They know how to win hockey games. They have players who know how to win hockey games. And Matthew Tkachuk, again, that last game. So this is interesting. You and I were talking on your show on the NHL Network, on Sirius, on the Hot Stove on Saturday. And this was ahead of game two. And we were making predictions for this game. And I thought the Florida Panthers, Florida Panthers, not the Carolina Panthers, not the Florida Hurricanes. The Florida
I've made
Panthers.
That mistake so much.
I know. What's an easy mistake to make? The Florida Panthers, I thought they were going to come out just like a bat out of the oven because they had all the momentum from having won that quadruple overtime game in game one. And they didn't at all. Right. And you thought Carolina was going to push back and they were tied the series up. And I would argue that both of us were wrong. Because even though Florida won the game, I was still incorrect. Because you're watching that game, Carolina scores not immediately, but pretty quickly, and had all the momentum in the first period. You're like, this is going to end up a Hurricanes win 5-1, 6-1. They're absolutely rolling over Florida, making them look ridiculous. But the Panthers did just enough, or should I say Sergei Bobrovsky, Conn Smythe winner, who is what he's going to be if they win this series and continue to play. You know what's so interesting, Ryan? I don't crunch the numbers myself because I just don't have the head for it, but I love Evolving Hockey, the website that does all that and looks at the analytics and the underlying numbers. And they have Bobrovsky, his goal saved above average. So basically he is outplaying himself. His numbers are historical. Since they first started crunching this stuff back in 2007, 2006, whenever it was, his numbers are higher than any other goaltender in the postseason of just playing out of his mind, playing better than we all expected him to. And he is, we can say all credit to Matthew Tkachuk and Sam Bennett and Barkov. That was a beautiful goal he scored the other day. It was absolutely gorgeous. All credit to the rest of them. Mm-hmm. But without Sergei Bobrovsky playing the way he is right now, this is not a 2-0 Florida lead in the Eastern Conference final.
No, agreed. And I would even go back a bit further that maybe the Leafs and Panthers would have extended their series past five games if it wasn't for Sergei Bobrovsky. When he came in against Boston, things changed. Alex Lyon, give him a ton of credit. He held the fort, helped them get into the postseason. It was the right thing to do to start him by Paul Maurice. But you have Bobrovsky, to your point about all the stats, he stopped 100 of 103 shots in the first two games. And in that game two, first of all, the game one was completely insane with the four OTs. It almost went to five. Remember Wayne Gretzky on the TNT broadcast after the third, he said, you know, we all love playoff hockey and overtime hockey, but can somebody just score? He was basically like, okay, I'm done.
Right.
I'm tired. I want to go home. And I get it.
Right.
But the Canes had a 20-1 advantage in shots, and they had that one 20-1. And they only had a 1-0 lead. So if you want to go back to 21 key moments or 20 moments, it's those 20 shots that Carolina Hurricanes could not get more than one by Sergei Bobrovsky. I'm totally with you. You mentioned Matthew Tkachuk. First of all, when they left the ice after game one after that fourth overtime victory, he went straight to the room. So he was on the boards and like, get me to the room. Second game, he did the same thing. He's creating a trend. So here's my question to you before we maybe get, well, let's get into a little more what we're going to think about for game three. If the Panthers, they're going to be on home ice now. If they win in overtime, do you think he's going to do the same thing? Do you think he's going to just go straight? Come on, boys, let's go.
No.
No,
he can't.
Okay.
He's got to relish it with his hometown fans. Because, I mean, it works. The we're out of here, boys gesture works.
I know.
If you're visiting, because you got to get on the bus and you got to get back to the hotel room. But now you're in the friendly confines of your own FLA arena, and you've got to celebrate with your fans. But it's going to be very interesting. We may never know, because two things have to happen. Matthew Tkachuk has to score the game winner in overtime. So he has to not only score the game winner, but I mean, he has to score it in overtime, because otherwise the game's not over, right? So that has
which
to happen
is expected.
Or else we're not going to get, we're not going to, which is expected.
It is.
Yeah, of course it's going to overtime. I don't know if Matthew Tkachuk is going to score the game winner in the next game, but I would not be the least bit surprised if every single one of these do go to OT just because of how well these two teams are matched. Really, honestly. So
Alexander Barkov, that goal was incredible.
Stunning.
Right. And I remember watching it, and you saw the replay, and when it happened in real time, you thought, okay, did he actually do that? I didn't think he made one extra move, but then when you saw it on the replay, I thought, that is gutsy. I mean, it was so smooth, and they put it in. I'm like, good on him, and Barkov doesn't get credit enough. I don't think a lot of people would maybe agree with that, maybe disagree, whatever it is, but you have to go back to Freddie Anderson, though, correct, in game three after that long game one? You have to go back to him. You really? Don't? Really? Because Ranta started, Anderson was tired. What we think is that he's okay. I think you have to go back to Freddie. I really... Because Freddie Anderson...
Ranta
as good as,
let in...
As good as Bobrovsky played in game one, so too did Freddie Anderson, right? In the four OTs.
I guess. I don't know. No. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think you're making a wrong decision there. They've both been very good. But in the last game, when you're only giving up one, we just mentioned the Barkov goal. When you're giving up one beauty goal like that, I don't know what you do about that one. And then you're giving up a power play, a tic-tac-toe power play goal in overtime. I don't know what you do about that either. Right. So this is not on the netminders. I mean, these two teams need to score. Whoever's going to score is going to win the game. I know that sounds outrageously obvious, but these teams need to score to win. And both netminders, whoever's been in net for Carolina has been great. Yeah. We've already talked about how great Bob has been. I won the one last thing on the Alexander Barkov goal. They were talking to Paul Maurice afterwards. And talking about that goal in particular, and he's like, "It's so great to see him do that because he doesn't showboat at all. He's one of the least showboaty type players out there." And it looked like a little bit of a showboaty goal, right? But he goes, Paul Maurice is like, "That's not who this guy is. He's one of those guys who, when he scores, he actually, you know, you expect him to fly by the opposing netminder and apologize for scoring. He's just so conservative. He doesn't make a big deal, and he's just like, he's one of the most modest players in this league." And we remember for years we used to talk about how underrated Barkov was, and he was one of the most underrated players, partially because of his personality, partially because he plays in Florida. I don't think he's been underrated. I think he's been properly rated for years now. You can't continuously say somebody's underrated because now you're talking about them. So they're not overrated, but they're properly rated at this point. But I like the fact that we're paying attention to what a wonderful player is, and the spotlight is on him because he strikes me as a pretty good guy, and it's easier to root for the good guys, right?
It's similar to when Jonathan Huberdeau was in Florida, and that a lot of the talk was, "Oh, underrated, 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 underrated." So both of them, I'm with you with that. And Barkov, to his credit, when he did celebrate that goal, it wasn't this, you know, fist pump. It was whatever, just kind of, "Hey, yeah, that was good. Let's move on. Off we go." Here's the stat for you before we leave this one. These two teams, through the first two games, I know it's only been two, but this is telling. They've either been tied or within one goal of each other through almost 202 minutes of play in the series. That's how close. I know both games in OT. That makes sense. Close. I get it. But it's just great. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Quick thoughts. Florida or Carolina? What happens?
I like Carolina to bounce back. I think they're too solid of a team to go down 3-0. I think they're going to pull out all the shots figuratively and not. And that defense, I just think that defense... I think it's going to be another low scoring affair. I think it's going to be a 2-1, maybe 3-2. I'd like the idea of seeing overtime again, but I think Carolina to me is, they're too well coached. The system is too strong. Their defense is too strong. I do think there's a bounce back here. And I also want there to be one. I have no horse in this race, but I do want it to go 6 or 7. So I don't want to see a Panthers 3-0 lead. Not right now.
And what they said, Brenda Moore and some of the other players, they said, it's not like the Panthers have been dominating us. It's not like they've been outplaying us.
Not at
right?
all.
So it's not like the Rangers Devils in the first two games when New Jersey lost, 10-2, a combined score of 10-2, something like that. Yeah, you were outplayed. But I'm with you. I think Carolina's going to come back. And I want this series to knock. I don't want both of the series to be 3-0 for one of the teams. But of course, those teams in that position right now certainly do. The Leafs. I think we said last week when we last did this that we're done talking about Toronto, but we have to just put a bow on it for now. Brendan Shanahan
keep on saying
Friday
that. I think this is the third bow we're putting on this.
Hey.
Because, yeah, Brendan Shanahan came out after. I think we spoke on Thursday, I believe.
Yes.
Maybe not. It was a Thursday. I can't. All the days run together to me right now. So whatever day it was we were speaking, that was before Brendan Shanahan came out and, you know, basically dropped the bombshell that, you know, and gave us the timeline. Yeah. You know, Dubas said this and we talked on Sunday and then he spoke out even though we didn't want him to on the Monday. And then they tried to renegotiate the contract. I mean, we can't do a huge deep dive on this because it's going to take us 45 minutes. But honest to goodness, okay, so Kyle Dubas is out as general manager. I still think we're going to hear a lot more. We haven't even heard from him yet on this. I think he's going to take a few days. So I don't think we're putting a bow on this quite yet, because I think we're still going to hear from Kyle Dubas. And he's going to respond to what Shanahan said that how he basically rashly, tempestuously changed his mind about wanting Dubas as the general manager. A couple days later, he's out, shockingly so. So are some other people within the organization. So now they need a general manager. And who do you think that's going to be, Mr. Ryan Pate?
All signs point, and this was, I think, even before Dubas was let go. And then I just want to put my at least final bow on this present, and then we'll open up another present, put a bow on it next time we talk about Toronto. I'll do that in a second. But I think a lot of the signs were pointing anyway toward if there was no deal to be done, and if no deal came to fruition with Toronto and Dubas. Say all this didn't happen, but just say they had a meeting, normal meeting, and both sides agreed, you know what, no, we're not going to go through this, yada, yada, yada. None of this soap opera stuff. I think the signs pointed to Brad Tree leaving. I really do. And at the time when he resigned from Calgary, I think there was discussion even at that point within the circles. Hey, this guy's available, yada, yada, yada. So I'm going to say on top of my list is Brad Tree leaving. That's on the top of my list. But then you got to think about, well, if he does come in, whoever does come in, what's going to happen with Sheldon Keefe? If Brandon Shanahan is, obviously he's looking for a GM. And if you know deep down that your new GM is going to come in and probably want a new coach, I would relieve Keefe of his duties. Don't just hang on to him. Don't keep this going and going and going, because I don't think that's fair. I really don't. I don't think Keefe's coming back, regardless of even if Dubas stayed. I don't think Keefe was going to come back anyway. And I don't think that he should have come back. They need a new voice. They need new this. They need new that. That's what I think with him. Final bow on the Shanahan thing quickly for me. When Dubas's agent came with kind of a new proposal kind of thing, he wanted more control, Dubas did, and all this type of stuff. And Shanny's like, you know what? No, I'm sorry. I can't deal with that. Shanahan's untouchable, Vic. Brandon Shanahan is untouchable in that organization. I'll leave it at that till we talk again.
I agree with you. He has, obviously, because, I mean, ownership is a consortium. It's MLSE. There's 8 board members. You've got the Rogers people. You've got the Bell people. You got Tannenbaum. He obviously has their trust. My only thing with what you said, I like the Brad Turley thing. I like the odds of that happening. I don't have an opinion on the move one way or the other. But I don't understand how this experienced GM is going to come in and do, I was just about to call him Kyle Shanahan. Oh my goodness, Victoria, wrong sport. Kyle Shanahan is going to be the new president and CEO of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Brandon Shanahan's
winning.
Yeah,
breaking news
that would
from
be
Victoria.
Interesting. Jeez. I can't see Treliving doing Shanahan's bidding just because he's been around the block. He's an experienced GM. Mm-hmm. And just to come in and be the yes guy, no guy for the guy who's really pulling the strings, I really wonder how that is going to work. So it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be interesting for a long time. It's going to be interesting when they hire the GM. I'm with you about let Sheldon Keefe go. We're essentially sure he's not going to stick around. Just letting him, I don't know, hang in the wind like this, I think is rude, to be perfectly honest. And then there's the next level. We just learned in the last day or two that the Pittsburgh Penguins have officially asked, well, the rumor has it, the Pittsburgh Penguins have officially asked the Toronto Maple Leafs for permission to speak to Kyle Dubas. So here was a guy who said he was Leafs or bust just a week ago. And is he truly Leafs or bust? Because he still wanted to be the GM. We now found out he wanted to be the GM. He tried to negotiate in the press. It didn't work. He gambled and he lost. So is he now going to move on to Pittsburgh? And bigger question, is he taking Sheldon Keefe with him? There's also that to be determined, because those two have a good relationship. I love it. I think I love this stuff. I think the soap opera, as much as I get, you know, I just find it fascinating. It's not, I don't even consider it entertaining. It is entertaining, I suppose, but fascinating is really what the term is for it, because there's just so many moving pieces now and the drama continues in Toronto. We've got a couple of banger series going on right now, and almost all the radio stations and all the shows are starting off with what's going on within the Toronto Maple Leafs organization. And I find it utterly fascinating.
It's like a premiere of a new movie or something like that. It takes precedence over what exactly is happening. I'm with you. The whole thing and how it ended was messy this past week, but at the end of it, it's certainly been intriguing. This is also intriguing as well. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman will meet with Joel Quenneville after the postseason. This came out back on Friday. And he'll look at his status with the league. Of course, he did resign, which he should have. Been out of the NHL since October 21. He was with the Panthers at the time, and it was all part of that investigation about in 2010, the allegation involving Kyle Beach, the Blackhawks, the sexual assault, all that type of stuff. I don't know. It's not my business to question anybody's decisions. They can do what they want. They can decide on whoever they want, all that type of thing. Certainly didn't sit well with me when I first saw this about Quenneville. I have certainly much different opinion I have of him now than I did before all this stuff came out a few years ago.
I think we've been on record already saying that I don't love this situation. I'm also somebody, I do think in certain cases, people, in a lot of cases, people deserve second and in some cases, third chances. I think there's something to that. I'd really like to hear from Joel Quenneville if he is reinstated. And I think we all are expecting him to be, along with Stan Bowman. I would be surprised if Gary Bettman just said, yes, you can't rejoin. I think that would be much more shocking than the other decision. So I think we are looking at this. I am going to reserve judgment on this entire situation until I hear from him. I want to hear from him first. I'd also love to hear from Kyle Beach on the situation, but I'm not asking Kyle Beach to do anything here because, again, we're not re-traumatizing the victim of the situation. No interest in that whatsoever. But again, let's see. Right now, though, this is very interesting, Ryan. Joel Quenneville is the odds-on favorite to be the next coach, according to oddsmakers, to be the next coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So he's number one. Bruce Boudreau is number two. Yeah. Peter Laviolette is number three. And then we're starting to get into nonsensical stuff like Dale Hunter leaving the Golden Knights, Victoria, the London Knights, to come back to the NHL, which I would just drop to the ground if I heard that Dale Hunter is coming.
Agreed.
After the whole Hunter relationship, I know it's different Hunters. There's Mark Hunters and there's Dale Hunters and there's Dylan Hunters. There's Hunters everywhere. But it would be, that one would shock me. But the top three that we're looking at right now, Quenneville, Boudreau, and I can't see it being Boudreau because he's a player's coach. And I think the Leafs have been very clear that they don't want a player's coach. They've already tried that route. It hasn't gotten the best out of them. So, and Peter Laviolette would be a very interesting choice too, but it could be Joel Quenneville. He could be behind the bench for the Toronto Maple Leafs next season. How wild is this league? That's all.
Yeah, it is. And if he does behind the bench in Toronto, how wild again are the Maple Leafs? I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm glad you said we will wait, you will wait, I will wait, and I think people should wait. When this does happen, when Bettman does talk to Quenneville, all this stuff, hear from Joel and whatever, we don't need Kyle Beach and put that whole stuff back out there again because that's just the way it is. But that's intriguing. Boudreau, I agree. I can see Laviolette, though, being a decent one for Toronto. They have to find someone just to treat these guys like, just get on them, I think. Don't let them this. And I don't know. The whole maturity factor with some of the young guys on the team. Anyway, that's a topic for
another day. I think they need a little bit more of a meanie. I think they need a little bit more of a meanie. Not Daryl Sutter meanie, but little bit more of a meanie. And maybe Peter Laviolette is this. The last thing I'll say about the Joel Quenneville situation is, however, Gary Bettman has said he's not talking to either him or Stan Bowman until after the conclusion of the season. So we're looking at still another month or so. And if the Maple Leafs want to get a coach in place first, that timeline, I mean, we can pretty much rule out Stan Bowman being the general manager because they need to get a general manager. So it would be interesting. I just don't know how the timeline, you don't need to have a coach in place ahead of the draft. I understand that, but you'd like to have your ducks in a row sooner rather than later. And I don't know again how that timing is going to work out. So we'll have to stay tuned. So that's all we're going to say about the Toronto Maple Leafs until the next time we're on.
For now.
In which case we're going to, again, to grab our fourth bow and wrap it up again one more time. Because I will absolutely guarantee you in the next 3 days, somebody's going to say something. There's going to be another revelation. Yep. And there's going to be more for us to talk about off ice, as in addition to the great hockey we're watching on ice.
And for that, thank you, Toronto, for having us or letting us fill a few minutes, even more than that, of our podcast. So yeah, it's the gift that keeps on giving, Vic, the Toronto Maple Leafs putting a bow on everything. Game number three tonight coming up, Florida and the Carolina Hurricanes, 8 Eastern time. And then tomorrow it's game three, Vegas and Dallas. Vegas on top of the Stars 2-0. We'll be back later on in the week and lots more to talk about, I'm sure. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter at Ryan M. Payton, at Victoria Matiash. And you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Also on the SiriusXM app. We will talk to you later on in the week.
This has been Pucks and Seven, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.